It was 1971. I was in my junior year of high school. And it was in Rhodesia, which was a very British kind of culture. And the school I was at was an all-boys school, and it was very disciplinarian. It was a typical kind of corporal punishment place for boys that got out of control, had to go to the headmaster's office, and then he would push you on to the deputy headmaster, who had a cane, and he administered the punishment. So it was a typical British public school kind of environment that I grew up in. Now, the deputy headmaster's name was Mr. Dry. And that's a kind of a picture of him. It's not really him, but it's kind of almost him. It was the closest I could find. He had a massive handlebar mustache. He was always very well dressed, suit, tie. And he usually had on an academic gown over the top of that as well. Even in the middle of summer, when everyone was pouring sweat, he'd be wearing that with his academic gown. Mr. Dry was one that you didn't ever want to cross. Don't mess with Mr. Dry. Everyone was scared of him. When he'd walk across the quadrangle, he had a particular way of walking. He'd sort of sway his shoulders from side to side. And as he did that, his academic gown would flap behind him in the wind. And boys would scatter. Oh, here comes Mr. Dry. And everyone would run. So, to the incident regarding Mr. Dry and Derek Strauss. Again, we're in my junior year. It's 1971. Mr. Dry would stand in for some of the teachers if they were absent on sickness. And this particular day, our English teacher was sick, called in sick, and Mr. Dry arrived, and he was going to run the class for that day. So here we are, first class of the day, and he starts with a bit of a preamble on some of the reading we were supposed to do and some of the analysis of this book that we were studying, this English set work book. And once he'd done his preamble, he said, and I'm going to ask you questions of what you should have been studying for your homework. And he casts his eye around the class, and he looks at me, and he says, Strauss, stand up. What did you find on such and such, a question? What were your thoughts? That was exactly what I was fearing. See, I hadn't done my homework. And the reason I hadn't done my homework was actually a really valid reason. Some of our relatives had arrived from South Africa unexpectedly the night before, and I ran out of time. I just didn't have time. I couldn't just say, well, I haven't seen my relatives for a year, and I don't care. I'm just going to go and do my homework. I had to be polite. So here I was. What was I going to say to Mr. Dry? I stood up, trembling. I said, sir, I'm afraid I haven't done my homework. Well, at that, he looked at me, kind of like that chap is in the picture there, glaring at me. And then he had a way of standing in front of the class. He'd put his fingers in behind his lapel, and he'd bounce up and down like this, with his academic gown flapping behind him. And he looked at me again, and then he said, is this rebellion? You see, he was trying to understand. He wasn't making an immediate judgment. He was trying to understand. And this topic of rebellion is something, and actually that incident specifically, even today when I get together with some of my classmates from Rhodesia, we talk about this. They bring it up, and we sit and chuckle about it now. But it was petrifying at the time. I'll tell you a little bit more about how it ended, but let's talk about rebellion. Our society glorifies rebels. James Dean. You know, rebel without a cause. Frank Sinatra, I'm going to do everything my way. If I didn't suggest it, we're not doing it. If someone else suggests, forget about it. It's a bad idea. We're going to do things my way. Even things like beverages. This company, 12.5, have a Rebel product line of premium malt beverages, Rebel Hard Coffee, Rebel Hard Tea, and Rebel Hard Juice. You know, Rebel is portrayed as good. So my question to us today is, has the spirit of rebellion rubbed off on us? Is it possible that perhaps it's rubbed off on us a little bit? Do I have a rebellious heart? Do you have a rebellious heart? Do we have rebellious hearts? If so, what should we do about it? And that's what we're going to talk about. So, what is rebellion? What is rebellion? Well, there are lots of examples about it in history, aren't there? There's the very early start of this nation. The Boston Tea Party was, it was seen as rebellion against the crown. The country that I came from was also part of the British Empire, and we also rebelled, believe it or not. Rhodesia rebelled against Britain. In fact, Rhodesia and America, the only two colonies that rebelled against the crown, all the other colonies were granted independence. We had the UDI, the Unilateral Declaration of Independence. And after that followed a bloody war. It wasn't fun. So there are lots of examples of rebellion that a lot of us are very familiar with. But if we go back and really think about what is rebellion, what's the essence of it? It's, don't tell me what to do. That's the essence of it. Don't tell me what to do. Let's go way back in terms of rebellion. Lucifer. That's where it all started. Lucifer rebelled. Adam and Eve rebelled against God. Israel at Mount Sinai rebelled against God. Miriam and Aaron in Numbers. It's recounted as to what went on with them. They rebelled against God. Korah, just a couple of chapters later in Numbers 16, verse 3 and 41, it talks about the rebellion of Korah. We're all familiar with that one. We know that Israel wanted a king. There was a system of judges that God had put in place. But no, we've got to have a king. And what did God say? You rejected me in this action. You have rebelled against me. We know the story of King Saul. King Saul and Amalek. He was supposed to go into battle. God told him. Samuel told him. Go into battle and wipe out Amalek. Just wipe them out completely. 1 Samuel 15, verse 1 and 2, and also verse 22 to 23, really recounts the crazy stuff that happened, that Saul just rebelled. He said, no, I'm going to do things my way. I'm not going to obey God. And then we know that Israel, down through the pages of the Bible, over and over again, it talks about the rebellion. Let's take a look at that one specifically. The rebellion of Israel. So, Ezekiel chapter 2. Ezekiel chapter 2. And actually, let's read that whole section from verse 1 through 10. And he said to me, Son of man, stand on your feet and I will speak to you. Then the Spirit entered me, and when he spoke to me and set me on my feet, and I heard him who spoke to me, and he said, Son of man, I am sending you to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that has rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me to this very day, for they are impudent and stubborn children. I'm sending you to them, and you shall say to them, Thus says the Lord your God, as for them, whether they hear or whether they refuse, for they are a rebellious house, yet they will know that a prophet has been among them. And you, son of man, do not be afraid of them, nor be afraid of their words. Though briars and thorns are with you, and you dwell among scorpions, do not be afraid of their words or dismayed by their looks, though they are a rebellious house. You shall speak my words to them, whether they hear or whether they refuse, for they are rebellious. But you, son of man, hear what I say. Do not be rebellious. So he's clearly making a very explicit statement here about the nature of the people as being totally rebellious. But then he warns Ezekiel, don't you be rebellious. Because where is Ezekiel? He's amongst the people. The question being, really, has any of that rubbed off on you, Ezekiel? Have you picked up on some of that culture? God's giving him a stern warning. No matter what's going on around you, you're living in a rebellious house, don't you be rebellious. Don't be rebellious like that rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat what I give you. Now when I looked, there was a hand stretched out to me, and behold, a scroll of a book was in it. And he spread it before me, and there was writing on the inside and the outside, and written in it were lamentations and mourning and woe. Because that's the result of rebellion. Lamentations, mourning, and woe. You know, if we really step back and think about all the places that rebellion is mentioned in the Bible, some of the references that you see in the slide, and I'd certainly encourage you to have a read through that in your own time, some of those specific things that happened that are recorded for our benefit. And you think about what's the root cause of rebellion, you'll see covetousness, you'll see jealousies, you'll see pride, you'll see greed. All of these things are at the heart of rebellion. Let's turn to Mark 7. Mark 7. And verse 21 to 23. Seems to be stuck. There we go. Thank you. Mark 7, verse 21 to 23. It says, For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All of these evil things come from within and defile a man. If you have a look at James chapter 1 and verse 14 to 15, James 1, 14 to 15, it says, But each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. And staying in James, another reference, James 4 in verse 1 to 3. James 4, verse 1 to 3, it says, "Where do wars and fights come from among you?" And as I mentioned, the unilateral declaration of independence in Rhodesia led to a war. 8 years, bloody war. Where do wars and fights come among you? They do not come from your desires for pleasure that war, or sorry, do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and you don't have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures. Bottom line, brethren, we're all really rebels by nature. That's the fundamental thing. We're all actually rebels by nature. Let's look at Romans 3. Romans 3, verse 10 to 12. Romans 3, 10 to 12. And we'll also look at verse 23. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none who understands. There is none who seeks after God. They've all turned aside. They've altogether become unprofitable. There is none who does good. No, not one. And then later on it says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Bottom line, the root cause is our nature. And we've got to overcome our natures. Let's contrast the heart of rebellion and the heart of God. The heart of rebellion and the heart of God. Let's look at, for the heart of God, David. David has been called a man after God's own heart. Sure, he did some crazy stuff. Some really messed up things happened. But he repented deeply of that. But God looked at his heart and God said, there's a man after my own heart. So 1 Samuel, let's look at the passage here from verse 2 through verse 12. 1 Samuel 24, verse 2 through 12. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats. So he came to the sheepfolds by the road where there was a cave, and Saul went in to attend to his needs. David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave. Then the men of David said to him, this is the day the Lord has said to you, behold, I'll deliver your enemy in your hand, and you may do to him as it seems good to you. And David rose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Now it happened, after that David's heart troubled him, because he'd cut Saul's robe. And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David restrained his servants with these words, and did not allow them to rise against Saul. And Saul got up from the cave and went on his way. I wonder how many of us would have done the same thing. I mean, you've got all your mates around you, all of them saying, go for it, now's the time. God's given this opportunity to you. Would that have been a spirit of rebellion? Going against the king, God's anointed? Continuing in this passage, David also arose afterwards, went out of the cave, and called out to Saul, saying, my lord the king. See, he doesn't just call him, hey, Saul. He's showing him respect. My lord, the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed down. And David said to Saul, "Why did you listen to the words of men who say, 'Indeed, David seeks your harm'? Look, this day, your eyes have seen the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave. Someone urged me to kill you, but my eye spared you, and I said, 'I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed.' Moreover, my father, obviously in a respectful sense, not his real father, 'Yes, see the corner of your robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the corner of your robe, I did not kill you. Know and see, there is neither evil nor rebellion in my heart or in my hand. I have not sinned against you. Yet you hunt my life to take it. Let the Lord judge between me and you, and let the Lord avenge me on you. But my hand shall not be against you.'" We learn something from this, don't we? About the heart. The heart and the spirit of rebellion. And the heart of, that is the heart modeled after God. We also learn it takes patience. Because God had promised David he was going to be the king. And David waited 20 years after that. Still to ascend the throne. Well, not after that incident, but after he'd been anointed. So he was anointed. God made the promise. 20 years passed by. He had to put up with Saul. And only then did he come to be king. So patience is important. And really what that also tells us is that the spirit of rebellion is impatient. I want it now. I want everything now to go my way now. I'm not going to be patient. So, brethren, we've seen a little bit about, examples, modern-day examples. We've seen about the examples that come out of the Bible from the very beginning with Satan. And we've seen that rebellion is something that is part of us, naturally. We all, given our own carnal natures, are just going to rebel. And the only thing that's going to save us from that is the Spirit of God working in us. What do we need to do? What do we need to do going forward in our lives? Well, firstly, we need to be aware. We need to be aware. So let's look at Luke chapter 12 and verse 25. Luke 12 and verse 25. "And he said to them, 'Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of things he possesses.'" Now, covetousness is not just about materialism, though. Covetousness is also, I want power. I want to be the one who's making the decisions in my life. I want to have control over my life. You're not the boss of me. I'm the boss of me. And I covet being the boss of me. It's not always easy for us to see when we are being rebellious as opposed to simply being independent in an okay way. When is independence rebellious? When is an independent spirit rebellious? Well, it's when it gets close to that tipping point of being driven by covetousness, by, "Don't tell me what to do." The second point is about discernment. And this is where it really does take being close to God and calling on Him to help us to discern when our spirit of independence is starting to butt onto a spirit of rebellion. We've got to stay as far away from that dividing line as possible. And discernment from God is what's going to help us to do that. And we've got to ask Him for that. You know, David said in the Psalms, show me my heart. Show me what's going on in here, because I don't know. I have no idea. Show me my secret sins. Help me to understand when my motivation's all messed up and I'm going the wrong way. That was one of the interesting lessons that I learned from that situation with Mr. Dry, by the way. He was very discerning. He actually, after I'd explained to him, sir, this is what happened, that we had visitors come from South Africa. I hadn't seen them for years. I had to be polite. I had to stay with them. And by the time, you know, the visit was done and they were, I'd given up my bedroom for them to sleep in, and I was sleeping in the lounge. It was late, and I just didn't get to my homework, and I'm going to work on it today. As soon as I get home, and I'll have it for you tomorrow. He discerned that I was genuine. I wasn't rebelling. He discerned that, and he was patient, and he said, after a long sigh and standing there and bouncing up and down on his heels for a while, he said, all right, I'll see you tomorrow morning, bright and early. Show me your homework. And I was like, phew. And everyone else in the class remembers it well. Anyway, so a slight digression. We're still back to number 2 on the list of call to action here. Which is use discernment. Use discernment. The third one is ask God to replace rebellion with His nature. Philippians 2. Let's look at Philippians 2 and verse 1 through 4. Philippians 2, verse 1 through 4. Therefore, if there is any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being one of one accord and of one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. If we ask God for His nature and we take on this lowliness of mind and we don't do things based on what I want or what I am so proud about myself, then rebellion is going to be put out of our lives. Number 4 is redirect our desires. Matthew 6. Matthew 6, verse 33. But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Redirect our desires. Is what I'm feeling so independent about and so you're not the boss of me about, is it because of something that I'm desiring, which is really in the greater scheme of things, not that important? Certainly, you know, when is it okay for us to say, no, I'm not going to do that? It's when it goes against God's will. When someone is telling us, bow down and worship my image, and we're saying, sorry, King, we're not going to do that. We're not going to bow down and worship your image because that's against what God has commanded. That's when it's okay to, and I'm using air quotes here, rebel. But I'd rather use another word. That's when it's good to put your foot down and say, no, I'm not doing that. That's a clear case. But, you know, we've got to really use discernment and think about ourselves and the way we act and how we do things. And if our immediate knee-jerk reaction in everyday life when everything happens around us is, no, you're not the boss of me. I want to do things my way. Then we probably got to ask ourselves the question, is there something wrong inside of me? Is my heart still wrong? And how can I get my heart right with God? The wonderful thing is this fifth point, the fifth and last point here. Be encouraged, because we can overcome. We can overcome. God makes many promises in his word. One of the most excellent ones is James 4. In James 4, verse 7, it says, submit to God, resist Satan, and he will flee from you. Where does rebellion come from? We've seen, we go right back to the beginning, Lucifer in the Garden of Eden. Well, the whole picture, of course, of the rebellion is when he tried to go up to take God's throne and was cast back down again. But that spirit of rebellion, we know where it comes from. And Satan's going to try and throw his darts at us all the time and try and encourage us to be rebellious just as he is. And he does that through trying to get us to be proud, to do things our way, to rebel. That's his modus operandi. But if we submit to God and resist Satan, he will flee from us. So, brethren, it all comes down to attitude. Let's always ask ourselves, why do we want independence? Because that seems to be the leading indicator into some of these situations where we get into a rebellious attitude. It seems that that might be one of the leading indicators. So if you're feeling like, no, I want to be independent, ask yourself the question, is my attitude right? We need to ask the question, why? Why are we feeling that way? What are our interests? You know, our position might be, we want to be independent and we want to do things our way and you're not going to tell me what to do. That's our position. But what's our interests? What's behind that? What's in our hearts? So, every time you feel that way, ask yourself the question, just like Mr. Dry asked me, is this rebellion?